Ordinary Angels by Bridget Birdsall. Read by Bridget Birdsall. Chapter 1. The Valley. Mother is raging inside the house. Outside, you spit a stale piece of Bazooka Joe bubblegum through the diamond-shaped hole in the wire fence that separates your backyard from the brewery. Less than 10 feet away, a forklift hums and moves about like a giant prehistoric insect, sorting and stacking endless rows of yeasty silver kegs. Someone somewhere is roasting Polish sausage with sauerkraut. The sweetness of the meat mixes with the bitter scent of blood from the slaughterhouse where your dad is at work only a few blocks away. People call this place Pig Valley. At school, kids ask how you can stand to live so close to the smell of all this death. You never know what to say. This is all you've ever known. May! Instinctively, you run toward Mother's call. From the landing on the back porch, she shoves baby Hal's wiggling, wailing body into your arms. Get him out of my sight! She hisses. You clasp the back of Hal's emerald green overalls and quickly descend the steps, struggling to hold on to his bucking 2-year-old body. Shut him up, she adds, or you'll both wish you were never born. The screen door slams shut. She is gone. Hal's cries ramp into a high-pitched howl. His small fists flail perilously close to your face. You tighten your grip on the back of his green overalls, grateful for the handle the thick cotton provides. The emerald green corduroy matches his eyes. You, Hal, and Mother are the only ones in the family who have green eyes. But there's no time to ponder this now. You've gotten into enough trouble at school for pondering. Sister Frances says you must get your head out of the clouds. She told your parents that you must learn to focus, or you will have to do 6th grade twice. You definitely do not want to end up in Sister Frances's class again, so you've been trying not to ponder a single thing. You lug Hal to a red wagon at the edge of the driveway. He wants to run, but you won't let him. The trucks that come up and down Point Road would crush him like a stone. You are the oldest. It's your job to keep him safe, so you hang on tight. Shh! Your sister Helen pops down in the wagon and puts her finger to her lips. Everyone calls you and Helen Irish twins because she was born only 11 months after you were, but you are still a year ahead of her in school. Together you try to calm baby Hal, to warn him that if he makes too much noise, Mother will get madder. Then she will beat him with a wooden spoon and it will break across his back, and then he will really, really, really be sorry he was ever born. But Hal keeps crying. He cries until he can't catch his breath, and you're not sure what to do, and you say a secret prayer that he will get tired, which sometimes happens. I can't listen anymore. Helen covers her ears. She heads for the swing set where Jacob, who is only 6, is pumping so high his toes knock the top of the barbed wire fence. Twank, twank, twank. Helen settles herself on a swing, still holding her hands over her ears. The forklift spits and sputters up and down the bed of an idling delivery truck. Not so high, you holler at Jacob over the sound of the coughing machines. This startles baby Hal, who stops crying, gulps in a breath, and stares at you as if he's trying to figure out who you are. You smile. Green eyes meet green eyes. There's no mistaking you are brother and sister. It's okay, you whisper, and brush your lips against his damp forehead. He stops struggling, his body softens, and you turn him over and tuck him under one arm. Then you lean back into the wagon to keep an eye on Helen and Jacob. This is your job. You are the oldest. Dad is counting on you. Helen unplugs her ears and settles herself on a swing. The kegs clank and rattle as the forklift swivels around for another load. Usually Hal likes to watch the forklifts, but today he only glances momentarily. Then his eyes return to meet yours. He studies you, as if he is much older, as if he needs to tell you something, something important, but he's waiting for just the right time. He reaches his small hand up, touches your cheek. Your cheek is wet. How did your cheek get wet? You never cry. You loosen your grip and use your sweatshirt sleeve to wipe Hal's face, then your own. Then you open his tiny fist and kiss the inside of his grimy, sweaty palm. He watches as you run your index finger down his lifeline. Aunt Emma taught you how to read palms, but you can't remember what it means if a lifeline is broken. So you make up a fortune. You will live to be 99 like Grandpa JJ and have 10 children like Grandma Golding and grow big, strong muscles like Dad and work at Titus Tannery. Hal watches you carefully. He probably doesn't remember Grandpa JJ because Grandpa JJ died the same day they shot President Kennedy, just before Hal was born. There's something in Hal's deep green eyes that make you sad. It seems as if he is trying to memorize your face, as if he is a famous painter and he has to stare and stare and stare to get it just right. What? You ask, knowing he can't answer. He smiles. What? This time you jiggle him playfully in your arms. A sigh erupts from his small body, then a hiccup, and finally a jiggle as he closes his eyes and rests his head against your chest. His blotchy red cheek feels hot against your heart. The front of your red sweatshirt is dotted with dark spots from his tears. His chest begins to rise and fall in rhythm with your own. You smell baby shampoo mixed with baby sweat, and you say a secret prayer that soon he will learn to listen and to understand that he must not cry. He must not get Mother mad. You lean your cheek against Hal's to give the prayer time to soak in. On the other side of the fence, the brewery whistle blows and the forklift stops moving, and all you can hear is the squeak of the swing where Helen and Jacob are having a silent pumping contest and the soft sound of Hal's breathing. Inside the house, even Mother is quiet. You think how proud your dad will be when he gets home, how he will hug you with his strong muscle arms and toss you in the air and say, "Who's my girl? Who's my best helper?" Then you think that maybe, just maybe, everything will be okay. What you don't know in this moment is that this will be the only memory you will have of Hal while he is still alive.